Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. John Katzenbach is senior partner at Booz & Company and leads their Katzenbach Center, where promising new approaches in leadership, culture, and organization performance are developed for client application. His consulting career has been largely focused in these areas and spans several decades. He's author of many professional books, including Wisdom of Teams, Peak Performance, Why Pride Matters More Than Money, and co-author of the new book, Leading Outside the Lines. He received his MBA from Harvard, where he was a Baker Scholar. John is a founding partner at Katzenbach Partners. Zia Khan, co-author of Leading Outside the Lines, is vice president for strategy and evaluation at the Rockefeller Foundation, which supports innovations that help people share globalization's benefits more equitably and strengthens their resilience to social, economic, health, and environmental challenges. Prior to joining the Rockefeller Foundation, Zia established and led Katzenbach Partners' San Francisco office and West Coast practice and pioneered the firm's work on informal organization. Zia also advises leaders on the integration of strategy and organization as a senior fellow of the Katzenbach Center, which he co-founded. Zia holds a Bachelor of Science degree from Cornell University, a Master of Science, and a PhD from Stanford University. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, in your book, you point out how the formal organization needs the informal organization. Can you explain?
Maybe the best way to illustrate the abstract notion of the formal organization needing the informal is to take a more specific case.
All right, go ahead.
If you take policies, which are a formal mechanism in the organization, you'll have policies that will specify some rules of what people should do and what they shouldn't do. So it creates a black and white delineation. But there's a lot of gray zone in most of the areas where you're trying to instill policy. So, for example, if you're trying to create a policy about how employees should be using social media, you might be able to come up with some rules like make sure you're not representing other people's names or opinions, make sure you're thinking of the institution's strategy.
Right.
But they often need to be translated in different circumstances. That's where the informal component of values can come into play. So if you have your policies supported by your values, then you're actually getting the behaviors that you want. Similarly, if you only have values but you don't have some policies, you may not be getting what you want either.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That illustrates at that level what that balance does. And that coupled with if you have processes for how people should go about things, what do you do in exceptions? Well, that's when people count on their networks or teams to solve ad hoc problems. So there's that similar balance with many elements of organization which aggregate to this idea of the formal balancing the informal.
You know, and I couldn't help but think that a major problem is the implementation of goals when you're relying only on the formal organization.
Oh, yeah.
And informal teams that drag their feet can be responsible for the fact that change really doesn't occur at all.
I'm not sure I'd argue that you always need the informal. I would argue that you've always got the informal. It's there. It's always working one way or the other.
Sure.
And if you can get it working with you when you're trying to do changes through the formal programmatic side, the informal will accelerate the behavior change. If it's working against you, it will slow you down. Now, companies that ignore the informal can usually get stuff done, but they don't get it done nearly as fast. And often, if the thing they're trying to do is counterintuitive to the people who need to change their behavior, the informal, by working in peer-to-peer interactions, will derail it.
Hmm. Can you give us an example?
Sure. The Aetna story is really fascinating in this regard because they had a remarkable turnaround between 2001 and 2005. They went from losing $1 million a day to earning $5 million a day. What's interesting about the story is there were three different senior leadership team efforts in the preceding 10 to 12 years to do the same thing. And every time they failed to make it happen because the informal wasn't working on their side, it was working against them.
And what you were really looking for with the formal and the informal is balance.
That's right. They balance and work together. One of our editors had a great phrase, jumping together. That typifies what happens here. If they jump together, you really get more energy, more impetus, and more results, and you get them faster. If they jump apart, it slows things down and it often derails it.
And one clarification we make in the book is we use the word balance not to imply that they should be present in equal measure. For some organizations in their context and with their challenges, it may be more helpful to be more formal, and some organizations it may be more helpful to be informal. That can also vary according to the life cycle of an organization. If you're in startup mode, you're likely to be quite informal. If you're a major Fortune 500 company, you need a little bit more formal organization to keep things coordinated. The idea of balance is that they are working together to achieve a common performance objective.
Now, the formal organization is clear, efficient, scalable, rational, predictable, controlling, disciplined, and hierarchical.
Sure.
And the informal organization is local, adaptive, emotional, innovative, collaborative, spontaneous, and ambiguous. But you can see where even the ambiguous could be a benefit.
Sure. Particularly in circumstances where unique kinds of problem solving.
Right.
And ambiguity is a part of complex problem solving efforts. Ambiguity forces you to think things through in different ways. There's a great historic woman, Mary Parker Follett, who wrote around the 1900s, and Harvard Business Review did a reprise of some of her work a couple of years ago. Her view was, you have two different points of view, you're really trying to integrate those, and her definition of integrate was to get the best of two or more conflicting ideas. That's what the informal organization helps you do in situations where ambiguity is rampant. This isn't always a bad thing.
I think that's right. And again, this notion of what's good and what's bad is always contextual. Another way to look at it is the formal organization is often very useful in situations where you need efficiency. The predictability and the repeatability of the formal organization lend themselves to all the benefits of efficiency. In areas where you need innovation and flexibility, usually informal approaches work a little bit better. That would explain why when companies make very formal groups and formal processes to drive innovation, sometimes it doesn't work. Conversely, if a company uses more appropriate informal approaches at the beginning and they don't convert them to efficient production processes, then they struggle as well.
That's interesting.
The notion here is not either or. They both can help you in different ways as you go down these roads. Now, the recession has driven everybody to cut costs and take out layers and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those are done basically by formal disciplines and tough programmatic approaches. That's how you get costs out fast. That's the good news. The bad news is when it comes time to re-emerge and start working to capture opportunities and grow again, you really need the informal much more. And if you didn't keep the informal in sync while you're going along during the downsizing, you're going to have trouble getting it back to help you when you start to go into your growth mode.
All right. But can you explain this concept to us?
Let me clarify a little bit.
Sure.
You need the informal during aggressive downsizing, and companies forget to use it.
Right.
You need the informal to help you motivate people to do difficult things. That's what the informal is surprisingly good at. The informal connects emotionally. And during difficult periods, that emotional connection is very valuable if it's used in a positive way to accelerate the downturn actions. So it's actually working with you on the downturn side.
Yeah.
Now, when you go into the growth phase, you want it working on different things, but you still need that emotional, motivational factor. And so now the informal people, we think of them as nodes in your organization. They're the go-to people. They can help your workforce or your employees understand why you're doing difficult things during a downturn. They're very helpful in that. If you're not using them, they may be doing exactly the opposite kind of influence. And so then when you want to start using them on the upside, you have to go back and reestablish your credibility as a leadership because you ignored them during the downside.
Right, right. Got it.
And just to pick up on your point with innovation, I think the frame you use is exactly right. And that's why we always advise that you think of the challenge first and then think about what components of the formal organization you need and what components of the informal you need.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation is a very interesting case because people tend to think of it as being mostly informal. Katz and I wrote an article in Strategy Plus Business a while ago called Are You Killing Enough Ideas?, where what we highlighted is you can think of innovation as being really two processes. There's creation and then there's production. And the creation side is pretty informal. The production side is pretty formal when you're actually making decisions and applying resources to scale it up for a product or service in the market. The art of connecting the informal to the formal is usually what defines success or failure.
Okay. But how do you add structure? How do you use peer influence and collaboration to keep the informal organization in line?
It's important to recognize that you may use formal mechanisms to help you influence the informal. The two are not completely separate. What you want to do is use whatever you can to influence the behavior that you need.
Mm-hmm.
If a different kind of informal interaction is needed,
for instance,
if you want to change peer influence and you want peer-to-peer interactions to focus on a different kind of innovation effort,
mm-hmm.
you may decide to use formal mechanisms like let's convene a series of meetings with peers to work on understanding how we can get some cross-organizational influence here more targeted to the kind of innovation that we're trying to get. So it's not bad to use formal mechanisms to influence informal behaviors. In fact, they're very helpful.
Hmm. You know, you come up with some fun phrases in your book, one of them being fast zebras.
I wish we'd thought of it. It's from Mark Wallace at the United Nations. He was one of our case studies.
Yeah, we highlight that in the book and the story of how he had some fast zebras at the UN, and that term was just so compelling for us.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing about the fast zebra is he knows how to get around barriers. He knows how to use the formal and informal, and he knows how to stay out of trouble. He's not like a maverick. A maverick is somebody who doesn't care if he gets in trouble. But the fast zebra, he doesn't want to get in trouble. He wants to get something done, and so he'll figure out how to get around your barriers. What he will also do, if you engage him in a constructive way, is help you understand why other people are inhibited by behaviors, and he will help you, therefore, identify behaviors that you might want to do something about.
You know, helping the fast zebra, it's more about clarifying the objective, how to achieve the objective. They'll know better than you do, more often than not. But it is what they're doing differently that can start to highlight some of these organizational barriers. And these barriers can be formal barriers,
uh-huh.
processes that are too complex, or bureaucracies, or overly burdensome metrics, or they might be informal barriers. There may be some values that the organization has that the fast zebras don't have, and the ones that the fast zebras have are a little more helpful. So it's more a question of how do you help fast zebras help other people rather than how do you help them get their work done.
In your book, you mentioned that real emotional motivation comes from hard work, responsibility, and challenge. And I had a feeling that fun may be a part of that.
Right.
But it's not the most important thing.
I really do agree with that. I think focusing on fun can be misleading. Fun kind of happens.
Yeah.
People are doing difficult things. They're straining and under stresses, and they're trying to get things done. And so you're really trying to help them feel good and be energized about what they're doing. Being energized is stimulating, but it's not the same thing as having fun.
Right.
You do get people who, in tense situations, will have fun, but it's a byproduct.
That's an interesting point. Zia, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And so, for example, people might mistakenly apply a loose definition of the informal organization, thinking that informality is about having fun. Think about a fun meeting where you sit around, you joke around, you have a good time, but you don't actually get that much done. As opposed to a meeting where everyone is really engaged, there's good debate, good arguing, and you're making progress.
Right.
Time flies and people don't notice it because they're so involved. They will feel good about that meeting, which is a little different than having fun.
Exactly. John, I have a question. We recently met with the CEO of a very successful company.
Sure.
And he argues he doesn't leave, he doesn't manage, he creates, in his opinion, an environment where people are free to do the things that show their passion for work. Is it possible to do that and still get the accomplishment choices that make business continue to grow? Or is there a point where the company can't operate that way?
I absolutely think there is. Those kinds of things work in entrepreneurial situations when companies are small. There are lots of things you can do when you're small. But when you get larger and larger, you desperately need formal help. You need formal mechanisms, formal structures, formal programs. You have to train your people. So you can't do it as instinctively as you get larger. I really think you have to do both. Now, I'm sure there are leaders who are very effective at looking like they're out of the picture, stepping out in a way that unleashes people below them. But it would be very surprising to me to find any organizations of what I guess I'd call moderate size that haven't had to do something in a formal, structured way.
Right.
I think of it as a water level.
What do you mean by that?
There's a water level, a formal process that's essential. When you're small, it's not a very high water level, and most of the stuff above the water level is informal, interactive, and spontaneous.
Sure.
But as the organization grows, the water level comes up. You don't want it to come up so high that it snuffs out the flexibility, the spontaneity, and the informal side, but you need it to come up in order to make sure all of that spontaneity is going to come to bear on the performance and strategic imperatives. You can't get away from that.
And that's a real big challenge for companies that are growing, that have grown informally and then need to adopt a more formal organization for all the reasons that Katz outlined. And there's two usual challenges. One is there's just a perception that the formal organization is bad, that's bureaucratic, that's old school, and things like that.
Yeah.
People just need to remind themselves that the formal does something different than the informal, not worse, it's just different, and you need both. An example I always use is, I think everyone appreciates having a very formal process for how to get paid. It'd be a big nuisance to informally figure that out every month.
Of course.
The second thing that's hard is if they don't see the formal as bad necessarily, and the pent-up frustration with the informal goes to a point where they overcompensate with formal organization. I think an interesting example of that was Apple Computer, when they brought in the new CEO from Pepsi after Steve Jobs. And there's just a lot of additional formal processes that were brought in. That's a challenge whenever you have a leader go from one organization to another. You think that a formal organization in one organization can be imported and applied to another. But what people forget is the context in which a formal organization is working, the surrounding informal organization, is very different one organization to another. So it's the equivalent challenge to trying to do an organ transplant.
Exactly.
People just need to be very thoughtful about when and how they introduce formal elements, but it's always necessary as an organization grows.
Okay, I have a question. Isn't the informal organization the same thing as culture?
The answer is no. Culture is what influences behaviors. It determines how people do things. It grows up over time in a given organization, but the informal organization is only one major influencer on that. It works mostly on the emotional side. Formal organization also influences behaviors. It works on the formal programmatic side. So both of those are influencing culture and are influenced by culture. So culture is a product of what the formal organization gets through to people and what the informal organization gets through to people. So it's a very significant difference.
Right.
An example to illustrate that is the shape and nature of office space often has a significant influence on culture. And office space isn't part of the informal organization.
We've been speaking to John Katzenbach and Zia Khan, authors of the new book, Leading Outside the Lines. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.